August 1921. A wealthy politician, charming but shallow, ambitious yet untested, goes to bed after a perfect summer day of sailing with his children. By morning, he cannot move his legs. Within days, Franklin Roosevelt, at age 39, has lost everything below his waist to polio. The nails in bone agony is excruciating, but the deeper pain cuts through his carefully plotted future. For a man whose entire identity rests on projecting strength and following his cousin Theodore's path to the presidency, paralysis threatens annihilation. Yet this catastrophe became the crucible that forged one of history's most consequential leaders. Before polio, Roosevelt was what we'd today call performatively pleasant, a people pleaser who'd mastered the art of being agreeable without being genuine. His advisor, Francis Perkins, observed bluntly that he didn't really like people very much. After polio, he became the president who guided America through its darkest hours with unprecedented empathy and resolve. The transformation wasn't automatic or easy. It required 7 years of grueling rehabilitation, profound introspection, and the courage to reimagine what strength actually means. Franklin entered the world in 1882 as the Sun King of Springwood, the Roosevelt estate in Hyde Park. His mother, Sarah's near death during delivery, intensified her devotion, creating an idyllic yet psychologically confining childhood. Franklin learned that love meant perpetual performance, that approval required constant charm. This conditioning produced uncanny emotional intelligence. He could read a room like a psychic reads palms. But it also created a hollow core. At Harvard, he excelled socially while earning forgettable grades. As the 1920 vice presidential candidate, he delivered pleasant platitudes about progress without wrestling with its meaning. He had charm without depth, ambition without conviction. The family's response to Franklin's diagnosis revealed both disability stigma and their determination to control the narrative. When transporting him from Campobello Island, reporters were directed to the main dock, while Franklin was smuggled elsewhere and hoisted through a train window. Press releases mentioned a heavy cold, never paralysis. This conspiracy of silence continued throughout his career. Photographers were discouraged from capturing his wheelchair or braces. He developed techniques to appear mobile, gripping arms, locking braces to stand at podiums. The American public elected him 4 times, yet many never grasped their president couldn't walk. Roosevelt's uncle, Frederick, offered advice that sounds almost mystical. The constructive work of getting well depends largely on your own character. Franklin attacked rehabilitation with ferocious discipline, but the real transformation came from enforced stillness. For perhaps the first time, this perpetual motion machine had nothing to do but think. As his advisor, Lewis Howe, observed, lying there, he grew bigger by the day. The shallow charmer developed genuine depth, what Francis Perkins called the first and greatest of the virtues, humility born from suffering. Swimming became Franklin's revelation. In water, he discovered weightless freedom, a sharp contrast to his earthbound imprisonment. "The water put me where I am," he declared. "The water has to bring me back." He worked toward future recovery while embracing present possibilities, holding hope and acceptance simultaneously. The waters didn't restore his legs, but they awakened something more valuable: awareness of other people's pain and his own ability to ease it. In 1924, Franklin discovered warm mineral springs in rural Georgia that improved his muscle function. He invested 2/3 of his fortune, roughly $195,000, to transform the dilapidated resort into a rehabilitation center for polio patients. This wasn't political calculation, it was purpose. At Warm Springs, Franklin designed wheelchair-accessible walkways decades before accessibility was legally mandated. He personally supervised swim-in sessions, applying encyclopedic knowledge of polio treatment through trial and error. For patients like Fred Botts, paralyzed since 1916 and isolated for 8 years, Warm Springs was an oasis. The therapeutic value wasn't just the waters. It was the community of people who understood, who celebrated your smallest victories, who refused to let you disappear. Through Warm Springs, Franklin discovered service when no one was watching, service for its own sake. This wasn't noblesse oblige preached from privilege's height. This was empathy earned through shared suffering. After discovering Franklin's 1918 affair, Eleanor offered divorce, knowing it would end his political career, but stayed. Their arrangement became publicly together, but privately apart, liberating Eleanor to become extraordinary. She joined the League of Women Voters, mastered public speaking, and built a powerful network. By 1928, she'd become a political force independent of Franklin, writing in Red Book that women's suffrage had failed because women needed to organize separately and talk in terms of business with the men leaders. Her gloomy portraits gave way to images showing piercing eyes, touched by fire, and hungry for life. Their partnership became unconventional, but profound. Eleanor pursued civil rights with passion that sometimes conflicted with Franklin's cautious calculations. He maintained relationships with other women, including Secretary Missy LaHand. Yet, they developed deep mutual respect. Eleanor wrote to Franklin, "Just go on thinking of others and not of yourself, and I think an undreamed of future may lie ahead for the masses of people, not only here, but everywhere." They became partners in reshaping America, even if their marriage never resembled a fairy tale. When Roosevelt took the oath on March 4, 1933, hand pressed on the Bible, partly for support, his voice didn't waver. "The only thing we have to fear is fear itself." Within his first 100 days, 15 major bills passed Congress, restoring confidence through federal oversight, bringing electricity to impoverished regions, and employing over 3 million young men. The real revolution was philosophical. Roosevelt's policies restored dignity, not just relief. The Works Progress Administration employed 8.5 million Americans, building infrastructure and creating art, still gracing public spaces, an approach from Warm Springs, where the goal was enabling contribution, not charity. His fireside chats demonstrated another lesson from paralysis. Inactivity without explanation breeds panic. So he explained complex banking issues simply, speaking as though sitting in millions of parlors simultaneously. Francis Perkins believed his ability to connect came from the horror of his illness, suffering that cracked him open enough to genuinely feel others' pain. Roosevelt's story challenges everything we believe about leadership and strength. Though 1930s America couldn't imagine a disabled president forcing him to hide his wheelchair, his disability made him great, not despite it, but because of how he responded. He held two truths simultaneously, working toward recovery while accepting his present reality, concealing his wheelchair while letting polio reshape his soul. As patient George McLaren wrote, "Mr. Roosevelt came up from the blow of infantile paralysis to heights he might never have reached as an able-bodied man." We don't need polio to access this wisdom. Every one of us faces our own campobello, moments when life shatters our plans, forcing us into unwanted stillness. The question isn't whether suffering will find us, but whether we'll let it crack us open enough to develop genuine empathy, whether we'll use our pain to understand others' struggles, whether we'll find courage to be vulnerable while remaining strong. Roosevelt discovered that real strength isn't performing invincibility, it's finding hope in darkness and sharing it with the world.